those guys in there taking this, just coming off the field, being in there just now?
Pissed, frustrated, obviously not happy about it. And I want them to be pissed.
Surprising is this just, I mean, we all see the talent in this room since the spring training over the offseason. I mean, just what is the level of surprise that this has happened?
I mean, it's surprising, but I mean, you go through these things. Maybe this is a bit extreme, probably, but it doesn't help, facing two of the best in the game in the last 2 days. You could be swinging the bat well and run into those guys, and they're kind of like a buzzsaw, but. Yeah, I don't really got much to say other than can't explain it, and we'll keep on working to figure it out.
There's a lot of really good players in here, a lot of good pitchers, a lot of good hitters. We have a great defense. I don't think, it's what people have done in the past is way better than kind of what we're doing right now, and what we know we can do in the future. And so you can't just look at this, couple of games and say this defines us or this is who we are. There's a bigger, picture. As hard as it is in these stretches, there's a history, and there's also a future where we know we can go. And you got to take those into account too. And I think it still gives a lot of belief. So it doesn't make it any easier. We got to show up and put the work in and figure out how to do it together. It's a new opportunity. We'll come have the off day and show up and. It's another opportunity to kind of get a go.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, April the 16th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, interactions with me, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition, or a special off-day edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. As I had said at the beginning of the year, this season I was going to try to pop in during some of the off days and do more modified shows, maybe not the full hour we do. But look, it may be early in the season. Today is a day that you have to go on the air and you have to have a conversation, because a bewildering, maybe not the way that the series went in LA because the Dodgers are tough, but a bewildering early season 8-game losing streak, shades of 2025. Play that is reminiscent of what we've seen from this ball club since June of last year. An abhorrent start to the season offensively. And, what's really the worst part about it, putting aside all the stupid commentary and reaction sometimes that talk radio and social media brings up, but that this early season slump has really ruined what is the best part of the year. You're cracking off the cellophane of a new baseball season. It's been a long, cold winter here in New York. It was a tough winter at times with the way that the offseason, the topsy-turvy nature of the offseason went. And you finally really have some baseball to talk about. And let's face it, I don't think I'm speaking out of term or going to outside the lines here, but you're burnt out already. I mean, how many of you, be honest, how many of you probably did not even stay up for an inning of any of these games on the West Coast, mainly because of what's been going on, Dodgers series, the slump, the pit in your stomach when you wake up looking to see what the score is. the fact that you're burnt out, and we just landed on tax day. Like, think about that. Yesterday was tax day. That's a pretty early burnout. So, and I can honestly tell you, I've been, you know, not watching these full games. They're late. I've been getting up, you know, getting highlights, watching condensed versions, looking at certain innings and what have you to get a perspective. Not because of anything more than, you know, man, it's tiresome as you get older here, checking out these West Coast games. But what was promised when you looked at the schedule early in the season to be somewhat of an early season test for the Mets against the best of the best, the only person that maybe aced it or passed, if you want to say it, was Nolan McClain, as he went in there and did exactly what you'd expect of an ace on the road, a tough environment, and shut down the Dodgers. And unfortunately, the Mets couldn't scratch a run across for him. But I think the purpose of what this special edition of the show, you know, late week edition of the show is all about is consequences. Consequences of our actions. Because I think right now, and I'm, you know, doing my own thing, and I always get myself into trouble, and I don't take my own advice, fighting with fans on social media, trying to correct ignorant remarks, and you never win on that. I mean, that's the whole problem. You never win. When you're dealing with irrationality, you never win. So I thought about taking a different take because, and you heard Mendoza's comments, the brief comments that have been circulating around social media this morning, how pissed he is, how the team is pissed. You could tell, I mean, even Bo Bichette, you heard Bo Bichette. I think they're out of answers. What's dangerous now for this club is that you really don't win anything in April. Doesn't matter. I mean, Mets fans know that better than anybody. I mean, when the Mets started out 11-1 in 2018, they didn't win anything, okay? And you really can't lose anything for the most part. I mean, unless maybe you're the 88 Orioles, where they start out 0-21. Then you could lose a lot early on. But you could put yourself in an early hole. We saw that with the 2024 Mets. Got off to an 0-5 start, and then we're 11 games under. And had to, and for the most part, for a year, from June of 24 to June of 25, had one of the best records in the league. Now they have one of the bottom five records in the league over the last, well, less than 12 months, but since June of last year. It's amazing the swings. And I think under David Stearns, you've seen a lot of this streakiness out of this club. And one of the characteristics of this club, particularly last year, and even to a certain degree early 2024 before the OMG summer, is that they get into these spirals and they never end. They get worse and worse. They become very burdensome. They put them in holes. And they're not in a crazy hole right now, but they're in a dangerous spot. I had said on the short that for the premium subscribers yesterday, and that included yesterday's game, which now is off the books, but you got to find a way to get out of the next two games. So you really got to go on a Wrigley Field and the Cubs who've been struggling and righted themselves a little bit against the Phillies at Citizens Bank Park, you got to get a couple of games. Playing three-day games, they're not always the friendly confines for the visitors, but it's not the kind of environment that you're going to see in L.A., and certainly not the team, albeit a team that's expected to contend and maybe win a division and got aggressive at times in the offseason. But you got to get in there and got to win a couple of games. I mean, that's really, I think, where the Mets are at. I mean, they've done that the last couple of years. They did that. That was their last big moment in 2025 when they went to Wrigley Field and won a couple of games there in September, late September, before the Miami series. So getting into that, coming back home at that point, 9-13, it's not good, but at least it kind of cauterizes the wound a little bit. That's what you got to do. You got to cauterize the wound before you even talk about where to go next. And that's really it. Because if you get back and this becomes 9, 10, 11, and there's no end in sight, and you get yourself closer to 10 games under 500, you got a good month of baseball you got to play just to get back to even. I mean, ask the 2024 Mets. It took them till pretty much the All-Star break, about a week before the All-Star break, to get themselves back to par. And they were lucky that at that point, the league played at a lower wild card level, where there was a point in the season when they thought maybe low 80s would make it. But typically, the way that this always shapes up is you're going to need to be around 87, 88 to even be considered a playoff team. And when you're 10 games under, and they're not there yet, but they're halfway there, you got a lot of work to do, and you got to play really well. And look, the 2024 Mets did it. That's an anomaly. There's no indication that this team right now could even play 500 baseball, much less play 2 out of 3 baseball, 667 baseball, to get themselves back into things. So you're at this point where you got to cauterize the wound. It starts with winning a game. That's all you could do is win a game. You can't look much further than that. But what we can do here is look at the consequences for actions, because you have 3 pathways right now that the front office can take with this club. One is extremely unpopular. Another one is very popular. And the third one is kind of a half measure, and it probably isn't going to accomplish much other than rearranging the furniture, but sometimes that works. So let's talk about the unpopular one. And the unpopular one, the one that I've been preaching, the one that I believe David Stearns and Steve Cohen will do, and will keep, it's not going to be forever, but at the very least, I think they continue it through Memorial Day, just like we always talk about. That's why we call it the getting to know you phase. I think they know 50 to 60 games is that barometer, and we're a little more than 20% of the way through that. A little less, maybe, if you wanted to call it 60 games. But you're a little, you know, 1/5 of the way through that, 1/6 of the way through that, is you just write it out. You look at the club. You know that when you have a lineup that is outside of, and Juan Soto's not in it, so take Juan Soto out, outside of Luis Robert Jr., who's a little bit above league average offensively, and Alvarez is off to a decent start. Everybody else in this lineup is not only below league average on offense, but significantly below league average. I mean, outside of San Francisco, the Mets are the only other team that has been worse offensively in the National League. They're averaging 3.5 runs a game. That's not going to get it done. What's interesting about the league so far, if you look at offense, there's quite a few teams below league average. Ironically, the Reds are off to a good start, are only a tick better than the Mets offensively. A lot of the offense is being produced by the Dodgers and the Braves, and believe it or not, the Nats, who are averaging 5.5 runs a game. So it is interesting there. So if you believe that that is where this Mets team is going to be, that they're going to average 3.5 runs a game, less than 4, a full run, more than a run than the league average, then yeah, they're going to be a 100-loss team. They're going to have to pull this thing apart, rebuild. Someone's going to lose their job, probably Mendoza. I don't think Stearns, but it's going to be a disaster. It's going to put this franchise in a pickle, and it's probably going to put Steve Cohen in a spot that maybe not Will Pound-esque, but there'll be the total bloom will be off the rose. Any kind of benefit of the doubt he's been getting will be gone, and I think he's kind of losing it now. So, you know, that is some of the consequences to that. But the first thing is to do nothing. And I really think that the Armageddon scenario I just painted out, I just can't see it happening. Unless you have guys who are done, who are injured at a high level. And the one thing, though, that you have to watch out for is teams quitting. Maybe not quitting overtly, but the energy level gets so bad, the fear of the roof caving in nightly becomes such a big part of the equation that any kind of way possible to lose will happen. Look, you've seen it. Even a team, you know, and I'll go, we'll look at different eras here. You saw it happen a little bit late in 2021 when they went 9-19 in August that year. You saw it a little bit at times in 23, mainly after they ripped the team apart. I mean, they just basically, the wheels fell off because they weren't a competitive roster. But even the worst team money can buy, the 92 Mets, had their moments early on. It did get really ugly until the following year. But what happened there is that it was a team, and there was some underachievement, particularly on offense. A guy like Howard Johnson, all of a sudden his offense fell off the cliff. But they had some good starting pitching, if you looked. I mean, the bullpen's okay. It wasn't anything special. There was some decent arms in the bullpen. But you had some guys who had decent years. Bonilla in his inaugural season in New York did not. But what happens is the energy level and the mojo, for lack of a better word, just go south. And every night you find a way to lose. It doesn't matter how good the starter is, how many runs you score. Anything will happen. And that is a thing. I mean, you can't explain it. Analytics can't explain it. Now, the educated front office says, look, that doesn't continue because we have in the well over 100 years of baseball history. We have sample sizes that tell you why it won't happen, but it could happen. And that's the fear, is that once you get into that spiral, the stress level goes up, you start to play outside of yourself, you start to manage maybe a little bit differently. We haven't seen Mendoza do that, but players start to do things. You're seeing a lot with Lindor, the uncharacteristic lack of headiness. I mean, last night, not charging a ball, opening up the floodgates there late with Devin Williams on the mound. And look, something like that, when a reliever thinks he gets a soft ground ball and then he sees it turn into an infield single, it affects them. All of a sudden now, they're like, oh, here we go again, and they're trying to make up for it. There's a lot of little things that when the chain breaks in a baseball game that happen, and it starts very innocuously. It's like I always say, if you look at American history or world history, sometimes wars were started by not what you think. You know, teams go into the tank with sometimes the most innocuous kind of play at this point. So there is a risk to that. I still believe, and I'm going to stick by it because I've been consistent, that you evaluate this till Memorial Day. The getting to know you phase doesn't end early because we're pissed off about an 8-game losing streak and because we're seeing some trends of last year. Now, I know that that's not popular, and I know that that's not why you're listening right now. But there is that in the other extreme. I won't get to the mid-range. I'll save that for last. The other extreme is, let's start firing people. And I think the two people that have been called for, more so Mendoza, which is the least innocuous of the firing, but now you're getting calls for Stearns to be fired. And let me explain something to you. Firing Mendoza is unfair, and maybe it'll jolt the team for a week or two. Maybe a month, and that might be enough to get them back into this thing. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to solve anything. And I'll tell you an example, and maybe this is more recent history than the 1992 Mets, but and maybe some of you younger weren't old enough to remember, but I think a lot of you probably are. But think back to 2008, the Mets, and they were widely criticized, firing Willie Randolph on a road trip, middle of the night. Replaced him with bench coach Jerry Manuel. Tons of drama leading up to that without getting into it. Tony Bernazard, you know, backstabbing of Willie, thoughts that Manuel was part of that backstabbing. Omar doing what Omar, because he was a good scout, not a good executive, handling the media part and the personnel part poorly. But it worked. The Mets were, I think, 4 games under 500. Maybe more, maybe 6. I think they may have been 30, 34, 30, 36. Just 2 years after steamrolling the National League, coming off, similar to this Mets team, a collapse. So they fire the manager. Mets go on a roll in the Jerry Manuel, get back in it. We all know what happened. Couldn't finish the job the last week of the season. Not the collapse at the level of 07, but a disappointing finish. And after the initial jolt, which you could argue that Mets team was underperforming and landed where they really were. I mean, and I've talked to Rick Peterson, former pitching coach, off the air, and he felt at times there were flaws in that roster, that they wound up being who they were. They were an 87-88 win team over the couple of years that were disappointing post-06. Teams find their level. Last year's Mets team was an 83 win team. Because the pitching was bad, and doesn't matter that they were one of the best teams in the league in June. Baseball, over the course of a long schedule, finds its level, with the exception of some variability that you just can't explain, which is what you're seeing right now. So you get the jolt, maybe they play better, but in the end, similar to the 2008 Mets, this team will be who they are, whether Kai Correa is the manager, Carlos Beltran is the manager, you import somebody from the outside. They're going to be who they are, and you're changing it. You're giving the fans some meat on the bone. You're showing you care, okay? You feed talk radio, which was something that you probably were more likely to do in 2008 than you're going to do two decades later. You could do that, and I don't think it'll harm the team that much. Are you giving up on a manager who 5, 6, 7 years down the road, similar to a Terry Francona, went somewhere else and was successful, and you wonder, well, why couldn't he be that with Philadelphia? Did they give up on him too much? Bill Belichick is another example when he got canned in Cleveland. This happens, and then you say, you know, man, I wish I had Carlos Mendoza now. He was highly regarded when he was hired by the Mets. Maybe. I'm not so sure Belichick is an appropriate example. I don't know if a baseball manager, and I've come a long way on this, I don't know if a baseball manager has that impact. I mean, worked for the Phillies with Rob Thompson a couple of years back. Maybe you're in that similar situation. That's probably the more likely scenario to happen. I don't think it happens until Memorial Day. I mean, they gave Rob Thompson until late May after the Mets swept them in New York. They gave Joe Girardi at that point. Ironically, I've seen Girardi's name come up with some of the fans to bring him in. And it reminds me of the late 80s when Davey Johnson was getting criticized for being too player-centric and the fans wanted to bring in Dallas Green. The Mets didn't. Then they bring in Dallas Green when they have a young team, and that worked out horribly. So it's a delicate situation changing the manager. You could screw yourself in the long term. You could get some fool's gold in the short term, but it's innocuous. Now, the Stearns thing is different. The Stearns thing is more complicated, and I don't think fans are really seeing what the consequences can be. The reason you're in the situation from a player development standpoint is you have had no, and you could argue that the current philosophies, whether it's Jeff Albert, the director of hitting, the way they're drafting, the way that they're teaching players in the minors, you could make the argument you're not happy about it because you're not seeing results yet. But by and large, Stearns still has a big chunk of this roster that is his because he imported these players outside the organization. Carson Benj is kind of like the poster child of the first Stearns-centric draft pick. I mean, even McClain to a certain degree wasn't his. I think McClain came in 2023, but they developed McClain. So, and sometimes it's not just the development, it's the player too. Yeah, 2023, it was the year before Stearns got on board. So you're starting to see that. The reason they're in this pickle, particularly where I think they don't have a real good pipeline yet or a good feel of a pipeline. They're well-respected now with the farm system, and they're ranked highly. But the reason they've been kind of disjointed is because of the amount of turnover that they've had. Since Sandy Alderson got sick in 2018, they had three GMs to finish the year. They bring in the agent, Brody Van Wagenen. Cohen takes over, fires him. His hire gets fired because of indiscretions. They bring in Zach Scott. Zach Scott does his thing, gets in trouble with the law. He gets canned. Billy Epler becomes the guy that says, hey, I'll take the job. Billy Epler lasts a couple of years. Bring in Stearns because they finally want to have the architect of the team. Epler gets in trouble for mismanaging the IL. He gets canned. Stearns is in. Stearns is taken over. And, I mean, it's just on and on and on. We've talked about this a billion times. But when you get rid of a president of baseball operation, you know what else goes with him? His assistant general manager when the new guy comes in, Edward Brizuela, he goes. And by the way, vice president amateur international scouting, he may go, Chris Gross. You could say, well, the new guy doesn't have to fire them. No, those guys came in because of Stearns. When they get a new guy in, they may not want to work for that boss. And these guys are around the moon a few times in the league. They're going to have options and they could just leave. You know, Ben Zosmer, assistant GM. You have all these people in place now that in some cases have only been in place a couple of years. You are upsetting the entire apple cart. You're not just firing Stearns. You're firing the entire front office. Maybe not right away. And you could argue, well, Andy Green, he's senior VP baseball development. Maybe he slides in. He's been around. It'll be a seamless transition. Maybe. But you're putting the risk out there. Here's the other thing you're doing. You're assuming when Cohen fires Stearns, who was a no-brainer pick around the league, you're assuming that the rest of the league will say, oh, that makes sense. Fair enough. He deserved it. Team's 7-12. Maybe they're worse by the time it happens. That competent executives want to be here. Competent executives who are in good spots with families in good markets or markets that are not New York. And I understand what people are going to say. Somebody's going to take the money. Zach Scott took the money. Jared Porter took the money. Billy Epler took the money. I get it. But they were never, well, Porter was, and that was early in the game with Cohen. Scott, there was skepticism about being a number one. And Billy Epler had a lot of skepticism. Billy Epler was a hot item before he took the Anaheim job when he was in the Yankees front office well over 10 years ago. So you're assuming somebody's going to want to take the job. You forget how many times that Cohen tried to lure a Tampa Bay Rays executive, Matt Arnold, or, on and on and on. They were trying to lure executives in other you know, throughout the league, and nobody wanted to take the job. Now, they talked about Black Edge, the book, Cohen's history on Wall Street. I always thought that was BS. It's the market. And skepticism about the market, and then seeing Cohen fire this respected GM, who I believe will be here the entire 5 years of his contract, by the way. He may not get another 5 years. He will be here because he's paying him a lot of money. You want him to now burn that money. Oh, he's rich, because we don't really understand economics anymore in this country. He's rich. You know, he could just, you know, and he can burn money, but you don't stay rich by burning money, especially I think Stern's making $10 million a year. And you upset this whole apple cart, but you get your pound of flesh. Talk radio's happy. The fans are happy. There, you showed accountability. You showed accountability. You showed that people need to be accountable here. Well, now you're left with an apple cart that's upset, and nobody wants to be part of it. Look, if Stearns doesn't make it past 5 years, or even in year five, they can him a little early to get the ball moving on a new regime, that's different. But, nah, I don't even think the most hardened, impulsive executive in this league would agree with that. Maybe the Mendoza part, but not the Stearns part. And I don't think anybody's talking about that. You are upsetting the front office. And remember, this front office has been destabilized since 2018. That is 8 years. That's eight drafts. That's eight off seasons. That's a number of times where they have had to reboot, start, stop, different drafting philosophies, different roster construction philosophies, all those things. You could say, well, analytics guys are all the same. They are, but everybody has their preference. So keep in mind, you're shocking the system in a major, major way. You're doing it because you're pissed off about, if this was the middle of the year and they lost 12 of 19, you'd be pissed off and we probably would be having similar conversations. But maybe in the standings, they'd go from 11 games over 500 to 6. Or from 6 games over to about 500. Could be. But you're seeing it. It's flashing in your face. The overall numbers are flashing in your face. So just remember that. That's a very, what I just gave you was two tiers of a very popular, at least on X, strategy. Now, here's the third. And I don't think this is going to do anything, but I could actually get behind it. I think right now, there's not a hell of a lot you could do with Marcus Semien. And I did I think I said it right? Because I got some feedback over at the website, over at Talking Mets Pocket, that I've been saying his name wrong. And I appreciate it because, you know what? I botch names from time to time. I don't mean it. Ottavino, I botched for a while. Marcus Semien, Brazoban, you know, on and on. Sometimes it's hard, and it's the Long Islandese. You see, I have the worst of the worst here. I grew up in Brooklyn with Brooklynese, and now I got two decades of a Long Island, Long Islandese. You put it together, you got Brooklyn, Long Islandese, and that away you go. I got to give you something to laugh about this morning because not a hell of a lot to laugh about. But when you look at the roster, the real concerning flashing red light that may not be fixable and will cause them a great deal of pain offensively this summer, that I'm not even sure, you know, A.J. Ewing is starting to push himself into the equation, maybe even earlier than we thought with the way he's playing in Binghamton. But you're not going to solve this because you put your eggs in these guys' baskets, at least with one of them. And that's the disappointing start to the year by Brett Beatty, the continued decline. You could not be any further away from the OMG summer by Mark Vientos. Alvarez has been okay. And then obviously Carson Benj has been a topic. He hasn't looked great throughout, other than that early garbage time home run on opening day. He has not looked great. So you have three guys who are expected to be contributors. Maybe not core players, but contributors. And not below league average contributors, above league average, or heading towards maybe they're going to be borderline all-star and one or two of them contributors. And all three are lost in the dark forest. So you want some accountability. Well, Benj, the easy one is you send Benj down. You send Benj down. And MJ Melendez are up. It looks like Jared Young with the meniscus is going to be out for a while. You bring up an outfielder. You know, you could bring up Nick Morabito and maybe see if you get some kind of jolt from his speed. He's playing, you know, halfway decent down in AAA last I looked. Okay, you could do that. The other thing here, he still has an option. is you demote Brett Baty. Now, I think if you demote Brett Baty and you bring up Ronnie Mauricio, and I don't know if he can play first base. I think this is wild. But maybe you give him a try because he's not going to play shortstop full-time. Maybe Polanco gets hurt, you could DH him. But it would be a shame because of his glove. I mean, at this point, Bichette has played enough third where you know he could play the position. Maybe he gets some more DH time and you put Mauricio's glove at third. But you get Mauricio reps and see, well, look, we know Vientos is maybe not an option. We know Baty struggled and we don't know if he's a big leaguer. Here we are 4 years in. But Mauricio really hasn't gotten a real shot. I mean, Beatty's gotten a lot of rope. Vientos has got a lot of rope. Bench, all right, maybe he'll be back. It's a pit stop, not the first prospect to get demoted. Is he Jared Kelnick? We don't know. Too soon to tell, right? So you give Mauricio a shot. We know some of the warts, free swinger, decision-making, but he's a great talent. And maybe that's the jolt you get short-term because you're not going to rush A.J. Ewing. You bring up Morabito, you bring up Mauricio, you shake up the roster a little bit, you send Baty down. Look, I would tell Baty, at this point, I don't know if you're coming back. This is not like the last couple of times where one, it was a numbers game last year. Before that, it was like, hey, go down and get yourself straightened out. You know? I mean, look, you want to do something similar to not affecting the roster. You want to shake up not the hitting coaches, but Jeff Albert, the director of hitting, because the offense stinks. You can do that. But, I mean, they just did that. They just changed the structure this offseason. I just can't see them doing that. So that's what you can do. You want to go further. I mean, Christian Scott had a good outing. Do you go and add him to the rotation and screw around with that a little bit? That's more later season. Look, the next step, if this doesn't go and continue, the conversation we'll be having, and maybe we'll be having it sooner rather than later. It's not going to be in April, and we started to have it before the OMG summer in May, and then it got thrown into the closet. Is seriously looking at a short-term rebuild. Not a five-year one, because you got some good pieces or a farm system that's already respected. You haven't pulled apart the farm system, but a rebuild. Which would mean trading Robert Jr., trading, maybe Bichette at the deadline, trading some of your valuable relievers like Rayleigh, Clay Holmes, maybe Senga. I mean, I'm not looking at no trades and stuff. Like, really ripping the thing apart. Freddie Peralta would be available at the deadline. Like, you go all out. Not what you did with Scherzer and Verlander, but you go with a good front office and say, hey, let's see what we could do to restock this thing in a big way. Bite the bullet. Look, the Mets haven't done it ever in a long time. They really didn't do it under Alderson. They were in purgatory. They didn't trade Wright. They didn't trade Reyes. The Mets haven't really done a rebuild, like a big-time rebuild. Since the 90s, in 93, they were forced into it. And then that was very short lived because they had some stuff like they really haven't done that. And I will tell you, if this does not get better for the first time in the history of the Talking Mets podcast, even going back to before it was the Talking Mets podcast and I was doing the NY baseball talk, I would be advocating for it. No more patching it. Now, you don't get rid of McClain. You don't get rid of everybody, but every one of these veterans, they're gone. And now Soto is not, and I don't think you could trade Lindor. It would be a shame because maybe you're wasting 1 or 2 years of the core and prime Soto, and you might risk him bouncing. And I don't know the particulars of his 5-year opt-out, but you could lose him. But at that point, you can't do this just to keep Soto happy. Now, would Cohen want to do that, knowing that as he's trying to build his casino in the soccer stadium across the street and how he's been hard on the fans with the tickets and the attendance. Is he going to want that because you're not going to draw flies to Citi Field? Probably not. But somebody would have to sit him down and say, hey, you're going to have to take this short-term hit. Just like in your investment portfolio. Sometimes you got to bite the bullet, take the loss, and get ready for a better day. But we're not there yet. That is the ultimate decision. And that is a conversation, I promise you. See, you guys all think I'm being Pollyannish. I'm not being Pollyannish. I'm at a stage of the season in the getting to know you phase where I'm evaluating and I'm not ready to make any kind of impulsive actions. I just told you what an impulsive action leads to. Could be innocuous with you know, messing around with the coaches, bringing up a pseudo prospect in Morabito. It could be more gnarly if you decide to throw a tantrum and up usurp the front office that you just spent 2 years piecing together. That's like, you know, and you want to clean that up overnight. That's like moving the Titanic. It's not that easy. It's very slow. And you're probably going to hit an iceberg. And you're probably going to regret it. So there's what you're at on this off day. Those are your things to chew on. You're angry, you're upset, you're frustrated, you're sad. You want consequences. You want accountability. There are consequences to accountability. There are consequences to choices and decisions. You make choices and decisions angry and out of frustration because, you know, some talk radio host on WFAN demands it, or because a bunch of immature, lack of life experience fans are yelling, or broken Mets fans are broken on X. You could do that. You know, you wake up a year later, you're like, geez, that was dumb. It's kind of like going out, getting drunk and doing something stupid and then waking up and saying, geez, man, I wish I didn't do that. It sounded good when I was in the moment. You know, so that's where you're at. So those are the things I want you guys to mull over here on this off day. Take a day away from baseball. I mean, really? Take a day away from baseball. What's next? Well, we'll be back with a show on Sunday. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I think right now, get a win, cauterize the wound, and stabilize it. And you have to think, here's the only thing positive that I could have you walk away from this morning. You have to think that not only are the Mets in store for a turnaround offensively, but a big one. Because I'm looking at the numbers here. They're not a 3.5 run scored team. All right? And I have a hard time believing Bo Bichette is a 64 OPS plus player. And Lindor is a 66 OPS plus player. And even though Marcus Semien may not be the Marcus Semien of his heyday, he's not a 51 OPS plus player. And Polanco's not a 52. Now, maybe with the bursitis, maybe we have to rethink that. But a 52 OPS plus player. And I don't even think Brett Beatty, even before he had the decent second half, is a 37 OPS. He's hitting, you know, 203 with a 197 on-base percentage. Hasn't walked. I mean, Brett Beatty, and I know one of the walks was taken off because of the ABS. He hasn't walked yet this year. Amazing. Amazing. I mean, we saw our team with a good approach the first three games of the year, and outside of Lindor, and most of that has gone away over the last, you know, week or so, and Luis Robert Jr. not really working the count. Amazing what's going on. Amazing. So that's why every season has its storylines and twists and turns, and you, like John Sterling used to say, you can't predict baseball. And I'll tell you what, when we were talking in the offseason, we didn't have this on our bingo card, that's for sure. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this midweek edition of the Talking Mets podcast, late week edition, whatever, offshoot edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, interact with me, all at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Thursday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast on Sunday. Till then, take care, everybody.